This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Coming up next, all the latest football news and views from around Australia on FNR Football Nation Radio.
England's Brookhouse College provides a unique education experience for boys and girls, coupled with an internationally renowned and respected football academy. Providing a pathway to becoming a professional footballer, scouts from top Premier League clubs are regular visitors to the academy's fixtures. Brookhouse encourages players to pursue their dreams through its football program that includes nutrition support, sports therapists, strength and conditioning staff, and data analysis. The academy currently has over 100 players aged 12 to 19 who balance study while training 6 days a week. Academy graduates have gone on to sign professional contracts with the likes of Benfica and Leicester City, and you could be next. For more details, visit our website brookhousecollege.co.uk or contact our Brookhouse College representative in Australia, Sonny Marco, on 0412 286 546 or email smarco@bigpond.com.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Nick Debano. It's great to have your company this evening as we get through another jam-packed show. Plenty to get through. The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft will be joining us at 5:15pm Australian Eastern Daylight Time. And then we'll also be chatting to Albion Park's head coach and president, Adrian Arciulli, a little bit later on, because he's managed to steal one of his SBS colleagues for their upcoming FFA Cup clash tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see Craig Foster pull on the boots again. He's 49 now. He hasn't played in quite some time. I believe he retired about almost 15 plus years ago now. And it's a really good cause, because I think every minute he plays, I think $20 go to charity, which is a fantastic cause. A little bit of a subplot with this is that he's playing with a team full of guys that are basically amateurs. Some of these guys have, one of the people apparently don't even know how to take a throw in. It goes to show that this is a team of misfits getting together and having a bit of fun out in the field in the FFA Cup clash. And apparently they could be having up to 1,000 people come in to watch, which all money, tickets, proceedings all go straight to charity. I think it's Mums for Refugees is the charity which it's going to. And we'll talk to him a little bit later in the show.
And that's fitting given the advocacy work that Craig has recently done with refugees, in particular Hakeem Al-Arabi, who spent 76 days in prison before he was freed. And that was just an incredible campaign, and everything that Craig did to see that he was released. But now even more developments on that front, with Football Federation Australia throwing their support behind the AFC president, Sheikh Salman, who at the time chose not to do anything to help Hakeem's release, which is just absurd. We've heard from a number of individual parties, including the PFA, one of the largest stakeholders in the game, who have said that they're deeply concerned, actually weren't even consulted on the issue.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Obviously, it's terrible that you think that after all that's happened that they would at least have the support of, you know, Australia. The FFA wouldn't probably be backing someone like that for it to go again. It baffles me, because there's no real, you know, answer that you can really say and go, why would they do that? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me personally. It actually makes me feel a little bit sick when I think about it that it's happened. And, you know, considering as that whole terrible ordeal with Hakeem Al-Arabi, and he even came out and said, I believe there's no justifiable reason as to why that they would back him. And look, there's got to be questions asked and answers that we need to at least, you know, that they can come out and say, well, why did they do it? And hopefully we can get that answer very soon.
Yes. And as mentioned, we will be chatting to The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft, who always has his finger on the pulse there.
Everything. He's always over everything that's happening in Australian football, and it's always great to have a chat to him on a Wednesday.
Yes, one of the great journos in the game here in Australia. And remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 9944 9999, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio, or you can simply comment below if you are joining us on Facebook Live. Yes, we do. Facebook Live, our shows every day now. Isn't that exciting?
It's fantastic. Afternoons and evenings, even some of the club shows all on Facebook Live. And Some of the big news that's come out today is Western United announcing a triple signing of exciting youngsters, Sebastian Pasquale, Dylan Pariah, and Apostolos Stamatolopoulos coming all to the club. Sebastian Pasquale returning from Ajax. Interesting move to see Pasquale back in the A-League. He sort of took the A-League by storm at the start when he was at Melbourne Victory, had that amazing friendly against Juventus back in 2016. And I believe after two A-League games was already signed by Ajax, which I thought was quite incredible. And on top of that, obviously, Stamatolopoulos, who we haven't seen a lot of consistently. He's been very sporadic appearances for Adelaide United. He's shown a bit. And Dylan Pariah, who not long ago, myself, Athos Syrianos, and Josh Parrish went out to watch Melbourne City's youth team take on Lang Warren. And he played a full 90 in that one in right back, and he was absolutely fantastic. And what we've seen is just a lack of opportunities for him consistently. But these are three very good signings, I must say. These guys all coming in, and I hope it's a statement of intent from Western United. They're going to build a very young core of the team that's going to start with the likes of Stamatolopoulos, Calva, Pariah, Pasquale, and build around that and hopefully that they're key fixtures in the team.
I think that this is a great move by Western United, the new team that will be playing in the A-League next season, 2019-2020. They have gone out and poached three of the best young players that are going around at the moment to bring Seb Pasquale home. And given that Pasquale won't really be playing for the club he originally signed with in Melbourne, that was, of course, the Victory. It'll be interesting to see how that goes with the rivalry when he does come up against his former club. You talk about Dylan Pariah. He has only appeared three times for the senior team at Melbourne City, which is clearly not good enough because having watched him both in the Youth League and in NPL more recently, he is a player that can start and that should be starting. But unfortunately, the opportunities have been so limited in that Melbourne City
team. That right
City
back
team.
Position is stacked at Melbourne City when Richie Delatt and Nathaniel Atkinson there as well. It's very hard to break into. But I think it's good that I think he should probably be the starting right back at Western United. I think they should go with him and back him in to be that guy.
How does that go with Josh Risden, though?
I forgot about Josh Risden in that sort of instance. But then again, it's quite a good backup because they probably rotate the team a little bit. Pariah can also play further forward. That's another thing to remember. He's almost like a winger when he plays. He's getting up and providing that sort of cover for the winger coming up and he's a very good deliverer of the ball with his crosses as well.
It's almost like the Nathaniel Atkinsons.
Of course.
And I think that's what a lot of City players do really well. They are in that position, whether it be right or left back, and they like to get high up the pitch. You look at Nathaniel Atkinson, you look at the W League team with Steph Catley. She's always marauding up and down that wing and doing her defensive duties as well as attacking. And that's what we also see from Dylan Pariah. So a beautiful asset Western United have acquired the services of.
I think it's fantastic, but as you said about Sebastian Pasquale, I think that's the most exciting one. He's only 18 years old. That's hard to forget that this guy is still a kid. And he's going to be coming out there and he's going to be adding a lot to that midfield. They've only got Panayiotis Kone that they've got alongside him at the moment, who they signed from overseas. And they've got Connor Chapman, who I believe can also play as a defensive midfielder. But Pasquale is the first, I think, holding centre mid of actual intent because Kone is a bit more of an attacking player.
Whereas Pasquale is more of a six.
Holding. Yeah, he sits back a lot more and likes to dictate from deep. And Pasquale, I think, is a great signing. There's a bit of comments about saying, why would he come back to the A-League after being at Ajax? But let's not forget, he went there at such a young age. He was playing at Jong Ajax. And imagine the amount of development he would have had by playing there at Ajax, of all places, one of the best youth development systems in the world. So going back, he's going to play senior football week in, week out at Western United. I think it's fantastic. But look, as long as then eventually makes that springboard back to potentially go back to Europe, it might be a great move. We saw Tom Deng do exactly the same thing. He spent one season on loan over at Ajax and he came back an even better player than what he already was when he was originally at the Melbourne Victory. So maybe it's a similar sort of path that Pasquale's taking. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next season.
It will be. And of course, Pasquale hasn't actually played at Ajax with their youth teams. I think he's in the 23s and also 19s.
Plays for Jong Ajax. I believe that's their second team. They're playing like the third or fourth tier of Dutch football.
He hasn't had any appearances since November. So if he's not really getting the game time, maybe for now it is a good option for him to come back to Australia, get some minutes under his belt with Western United in the A-League. Because let's be honest, when you look at Ajax's first team, you've got Frankie De Jong and Matthias De Ligt, who quality players, both of which are being eyed off by European massive giants like Barcelona, Juventus.
Well, Frankie's already off to Ajax next season. It goes to show when
you've
got him.
Barca, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, Barca. I'm getting it all confused there. But look, they've got, as you said.
So he's not going to be able to break into
You're not breaking into the Ajax first team. Let's be real here.
And especially got the in that position.
Of course. And they've got the likes as well of Dusan Tadic, Donny van der Beek. They've got a whole range of players that all play through that midfield, which is an incredible one of the hardest positions to break into if you're at Ajax full stop. And if he's not playing for the second team, it's probably best for him to come back to Australia, where next season he can be part of the Western United team that will potentially could do some special things. The last expansion team that came into the A-League made it to the grand final in their first season in the Western Sydney Wanderers. So who knows? But they're building a nice team out there. I think that's now seven, eight players. So they've almost got a team. They still need a goalkeeper. They still need a coach as well. I wonder who'll be next. That's the big question.
Now, looking at the goalkeeper situation, who do you think might be next? We've actually seen more recently in the A-League that Lawrence Thomas was on the bench, remarkably, for Melbourne Victory, which caught a few people by surprise. Now, we know that the Korean and also Japanese transfer windows are still open. Does that maybe put the idea out there that he could be making a move to another club? Or is it simply because Kevin Muscat wanted to rotate the team and give Matt Acton a shot? And then we look at Melbourne City. Mark Birigidi was completely left out of the team altogether at the weekend. So for me, Mark Birigidi won't be staying around at Melbourne City next season. No. So does that maybe open the door up for him to go to Melbourne Victory should Lawrence Thomas move on? Or maybe to Western United.
I think that Lawrence Thomas, if he left Melbourne Victory, he'd be going overseas. And I think based off his own intent, based on what I've heard, he's not going to be sticking around the A-League if he was to leave. I think he's completely loyal to Melbourne Victory, and that's probably the way it's going to stay. I don't think that there's too much to read into from last Saturday. I think it might have just been squad rotation. We don't know if Lawrence Thomas might have been feeling the ill effects of coming back from travel, and they might have wanted to give Matt Acton the crack. But then again, though, if he doesn't start again this week, or next week, when the international break's over, you're more asking the questions. But if you're going to look at anyone, I'm looking at Mark Birigidi and I'm looking at James Dalianov at Melbourne City. Now, Eugene Galekovic, we know, is getting a little bit older, but I doubt he's not going to be the number one next season. I think he will still be the main guy between the sticks. But Mark Birigidi will be a nice target for Western United, even for Melbourne Victory, if Lawrence Thomas was to move on. But James Dalianov, if you want to look for long-term prospect, I think he's the best one. He's probably the best young goalkeeper that is there in the A-League right now, I think, in terms of a guy that still hasn't really been tried yet. And look, I honestly would say that he'd definitely be a target. They might look at someone else from overseas, maybe an international goalkeeper we don't know of. They've only picked up the one international player so far, so they've still got four more spots to fill. Might look at someone there, but I think that if you're going to look locally, Dalianov and potentially Birigidi would be right in front of, will probably be the most logical decisions considering they're not getting the game time at the moment.
And Dalianov has had a lot of experience, like, throughout his very young career. He of course is only 19. He'll be 20 this year, and he's already been to the under 17 FIFA World Cup with the Joeys. He was part of the Centre of Excellence intake with Daniel Arzani and a lot of the other players like Josh Hope, who we now see in the A-League. So he's had a very good footballing education, and he just hasn't been able to get a crack at the first team, which is understandable. I mean, if Galekovic is keeping out the likes of Mark Birigidi, Dalianov, it's going to be hard for him to break through. But we did see him feature in the National Youth League throughout the season, on and off. But Joe Palatsides wanted to actually put in an even younger goalkeeper. So even still, he wasn't really a regular starter. So for him, and now in the NPL, he is starting pretty much every game. So he's getting the game time that he needs. But I think if this is the way that Western United are going, which is fantastic for me, like, I don't want to see a new club recycling old A-League players. No. And that's what they're doing. They're going out and getting all this fresh talent, these fresh faces who haven't been given an opportunity, but yet still have a lot of quality. And that's what you want to see. If you're still going down that road, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't target like a James Dalianov, because then again, you're building for the future and you're building a team that will mature together and then, you know, potentially be championship team in the coming years.
Well, look at the players they've signed so far. Aaron Calver, obviously coming across from Sydney FC. He's been a one-club player. Before that, Connor Chapman returning after, obviously, he was here already with Newcastle and Melbourne City. Dylan Parayis, Melbourne City, Josh Risden, Perth and Western Sydney, Sebastian Pasquale, a small stint at Melbourne Victory and a post-loss Adelaide United. So it's not like they're getting the guys who have played at four or five different clubs, like, for instance, your Mitch Nichols, your Liam Reddy's, your Anthony Golex, who have played everywhere. They're going for guys who, they're going for guys that are probably out of contract. They probably were able to get them in straight away. And they're young players as well, other obviously than Pagnotti. They're a very young team, and I think that that's going to be the core foundation. Because even if they don't succeed in the first season, they go straight. That might not make the final straight away. Maybe the view is to get there down the track. But look, let's leave this Western United chat for just a second, Louise, because I believe now we are joined by Jonathan Howcroft. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening to you both.
Hi, Jonathan. It's Louise, and Nick and I are just having a bit of a chat about some of the latest news. Of course, the new A-League team, Western United, have announced a triple signing today with three promising young players, Dylan Parayis, Seb Pasquale, and also Apostolos Stamatopoulos. It's great to see them getting new players in rather than recycling old talent, isn't it?
Yeah, hugely exciting. Seb Pasquale, in particular, is in that handful of most exciting young players that Australia's produced for a number of years. So fantastic to see him in the A-League and presumably getting a significant role. He's had a great grounding in his time in Europe. He was obviously a phenomenon at Victory before he left. So super excited to see him. And like you say, this idea that there could be three or four younger players who the fans of the club can actually attach themselves to for a number of years. And I was having a conversation just recently with somebody about comparing Victory and City and how City have never had that Lee Broxham kind of a character who fans can just quietly see going about their business over a number of years, who can really represent who they are on the pitch. And I think that's one of the challenges of any new club in that process of establishing what their identity is, what the characteristics that make that club in the future. And these are the young players who will have the opportunity to set that. And hopefully kids, it sounds pejorative, doesn't it? But younger players like Pasquale and Stamatopoulos can have a number of years playing for the same team, learning their craft and actually setting the template for what the club is for years to come.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, in particular, as you said, because as like the likes of Pasquale probably has probably the most scope for potential, considering he spent that time at Ajax. Do you think with Pasquale as well, considering he's very similar path to what Tom Degg did, taking that time away, obviously going over to Ajax, how much do you think that would go in terms of growing him as a player? Because we saw, obviously, how good of a youth system Ajax have. How much will that help him when he makes that return back to the A-League?
You can only think that it would be an enormous advantage just for the quality of education that he would have received. The big question mark is that step from youth and reserve grade football to senior men's, because you can have all the talent in the world. You need to apply it in that environment. And it's part of that broader conversation that we're having in Australian football at the moment, isn't it? You know, what's the balance between a centralised model and the devolved club academy system? How do we get more opportunities to get these kids onto the pitch? When do they get there? It's interesting that Dylan Parayis is in this conversation as well, because, of course, he debuted so young for Melbourne City. And we've not really seen him very much since. So, how do we bridge that gap and turn these promising young players into seasoned full men's footballers? And you know, I think we're seeing the value of an extra club in the competition. That there will be more game time for these kids.
Well, that's exactly right, and I think that's I'm not a professional A-League coach, but from my perspective, that's one of the reasons and ways that you can really do that is just throw the kids in the deep end and start them and play them. And obviously that gives them an opportunity to build on their performances week in, week out by giving them those A-League minutes.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's the one of the conversations that I've brought up on a number of times on the show. What's the point of the A-League? And for me, I think there has to be a development component. I think we have to acknowledge that the A-League is part of the Socceroos ecosystem. It's part of converting promising young players into international footballers, and we all benefit. The game as a whole benefits as a consequence if that operates effectively. Now, on an individual level, there will be challenges along the way. Seb Pasquale, as an example, at the stage in his career when he had the opportunity to move to Europe, it made sense for him to take it. I think what we have to make sure is that the environment is as robust as possible to keep producing as many of those players as we can, and making sure that there's first team opportunities for the ones that want to stay in Australia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that there's also been, in the same discussion, there's also been a bit of criticism recently towards Graham Arnold and the fact that he's taken a number of these young players out of the A-League clubs due to Ollie Roux's duty and wanting to get them in ahead of their AFC preparation and also Olympic qualifiers. What do you make of the whole discussion, Jonathan? Do you think, are you sitting on the side of the A-League clubs that the players should be staying there, or are you more in favour of, you know, them going off and representing their country?
I'm going to sit on the fence, I'm afraid. I don't actually have a strong opinion because I don't really have much skin in either game. But what I'd say would be a bit of a repeat of what I said earlier. I just think we need to be clear about that balance of responsibility as a football community. How important is the Ollie Roux to Australian football? How much investment do we want to put in it? Is that more important than a league club winning 3 points on a weekend, or what's the balance within that? I don't think anybody's been overly dramatic in this. It's not like one team's lost 10 players and Graham Arnold stuck two fingers up at the other rally coaches. So, what's the right mix? What's the right balance within the game for prioritizing age group international and domestic club? It's one that we just want, you know, the people in positions of responsibility to be having and discussing openly, and so that when these kind of situations happen, it's not, you know, we're not in a case where coaches are sniping at each other in the press, or if they are, it's from a baseline of, okay, this is what as a community we expect, and if it doesn't meet those expectations, then fine, say something about it, but let's be clear about what we want to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's such a double-edged sword. I mean, Graham Arnold's been in both positions now. One where last season he was saying that the A-League isn't a developmental league. And, you know, he didn't actually even include any young players in his squad, let alone rotate his starting 11. And now he's like, well, we need to develop our players, you know, so they're ready for the national team. So it's like such a double-edged sword as to where you stick,
totally.
Where you sit.
Yeah, and you look at the template that he set with Sydney FC, and making them so successful, it's not a million miles away from what Tony Popovich has done at Perth Glory this season as well. You win domestic competitions with a high average age in your squad and not much of a focus on youth development. Yet there's still there's still the NYL, there's still a youth development framework, but somehow we need to have a robust conversation about where they meet and how they interact with each other. I don't really have, like I said, I don't really have a strong opinion. And when I find myself, you know, being asked or veering into this territory, part of me feels like under 23s is too old anyway. The conversation actually should be at a much younger age group. And how do we fast track those players that are under 20? And be figuring out what the best way of getting them into the professional game is. I do feel a little bit that if we're arguing about 21 to 23 year olds within around the margins, maybe we're missing the point a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt that more investment should be aimed towards those younger age groups. But Jonathan, there was another big story this week. I'm sure you've been well across it. Football Federation Australia have thrown their support behind AFC President Sheikh Salman and his re-election, saying he's actually the best credentialed candidate for the role, when ironically the incumbent actually chose to do nothing to help free footballer Hakeem Al-Arabi.
Yeah, well, if he's the best credentialed, then nobody is credentialed to do it. Shut it down and start from scratch. It's just a reflection of the appalling state of politics around full stop, and in particular the state of politics in football. It's disgusting. The PFA have very eloquently put forward the arguments why, and it just shows how little confidence we can have in the global football order. It's just a mess. You look at what's happened with the World Cup bids. You look at all of the corruption that was happening under FIFA 1.0. That doesn't appear to be enormously different under Gianni Infantino and FIFA 2.0, and how football is used as a political tool by people who we don't want to associate with, and let alone we don't want to be talking up as credentialed people, because they're people that you don't want to do business with. But the FFA will argue that they're backed into a corner, they have to back somebody. They're part of a regional bloc, and that's the position of the regional bloc. And part of it is just backing the winner. You know, you read the tea leaves, you figure out who's going to win, and then you find a way to satisfy your ethics to come up with the right way of saying that was who we wanted all along, because that's where the grants are going to come from. That's where the political support's going to come from for things like the 2023 Women's World Cup bid. So, it's just horrible. It's just an unfortunate consequence of how we've evolved as a collection of societies, that it is the kind of people like that have taken on positions of responsibility, and our options are either support them or put ourselves out as an outlier in the global football community and suffer the consequences.
Jonathan, would you say this is almost a slap in the face of people like, obviously, Hakeem, Craig Foster, and even the PFA, who worked so hard to obviously free Hakeem, obviously, all those weeks ago?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a demonstrably look at, you know, we're going to talk a good game, but in reality, these are the decisions that we're going to take. And again, putting, you know, trying to look at it from their perspective, they would argue that they don't really have much of a choice. What would the alternative look like for them? And take a step even further back from that and try and figure out, okay, well, how do we embed ourselves further in Asian football so that we have a bigger voice in that conversation, or that it might have been Australian going for that position from a position of strength, but we're not. You know, that's just the reality of where we are. But yeah, absolutely. You look at everything that went on and that very public, very visible conversation for a number of weeks to see everything that happened so acutely from an Australian perspective, and then say what they've said about one of the individuals responsible. I mean, you just shake your head.
Obvious, absolutely, and it's a terrible ordeal, obviously, that's still going, and you still obviously can't believe it. It's absolutely baffling that the FFA would almost put their support behind someone like that. But just moving on quickly, obviously we heard the news that Marco Kurz won't be coaching Adelaide United next season. There's been a lot of talk about foreign coaches, and in particular, I was doing a bit of research and realised there's only about two or three foreign coaches that have actually won the A-League down here. And it got me thinking about how foreign coaches perform in the A-League. And I'm looking at some of them that are performing this year with very negative mindsets in the way they play their teams. In particular, Kurz and Warren Joyce come to mind. Does that change perception on how foreign coaches are viewed here in the A-League in comparison to some of the local coaches who have performed at a greater level?
It's a good question. I'm not sure necessarily. I think we have to take each of them as individual cases. I mean, clearly, Warren Joyce's remit at Melbourne City has been very specific. I feel like what Marco Kurtz has done at Adelaide has had a lot of merit about it. They've just missed one or two pieces of the jigsaw. He has played a lot of young players. He has tried to play an attractive style of football. It feels like a lot has come down to poor crossing and a lack of a clear number nine. How much of that is his responsibility? You know, well, clearly the crossing and the tactical side does, but in terms of who he has to pick in that goal scoring position, I'm not sure. I feel like he deserves a bit more slack. As for the broader topic about foreign coaches, I think I'd wrap it up in a bit of what I said last week about Mike Mulvey and the Mariners. Clubs just need longer term perspectives and appreciate that if you're going to get somebody in, like, you know, look at Marcus Babbel at Western Sydney, he's inherited Josip Gombau's squad, and Josip Gombau inherited Tony Popovic's squad. So you've gone through two iterations that haven't survived beyond a number of months. You need to give somebody like Babbel or Kurtz a couple of years to acknowledge what, you know, what their methods are and bring their players in, give them time to establish the repetition that's required to convert decent footballers into the kind of players that they need in their teams. And we just don't tend to give coaches that much time, and I think with foreign coaches especially, it's just easier to get rid of them because there may be other issues, cultural, family, language, whatever, that makes them more disposable. There's less of an incentive to invest in them, but I don't think that necessarily means that they should be discounted.
No, I agree with you, Jonathan, and I certainly think that a club needs to give a coach more than just one season, especially, as you say, if they have inherited the problems of the previous coach.
Just to finish on Kurtz as well, quite clearly there's more stuff going on behind the scenes as well, isn't there? So it remains to be seen whether we'll get to learn any more about all of that.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and we'll talk to you again at the same time next week.
Thank you very much.
That was The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft joining us there. And it's an unusual time in football, Nick. The fact that Adelaide United have sacked a coach like Marco Kurz, who's done so much for the club. He's taken them to their second FFA Cup win. They're in the top six. They've had a pretty decent season. They actually haven't dropped from a top six position in any game that Marco Kurz has coached. I mean, again, does this come back to what the chairman actually wants and how Marco Kurz doesn't align with that?
Yeah, look, you can have that argument that they haven't dropped out of the top six, but they haven't won a game in about five rounds and they're not playing well at the moment. Now, he may be just copping at the end of not having the squad, because in particular he hasn't had a striker who's been able to bang in goals. And if you don't have a striker scoring goals, you're going to struggle. That's just plan A in any football team. But it's just the fact that I think that he must not be aligning with what Adelaide United want in the coach. They must want to be able to get back to that top level. They must think that their squad is good enough to go at a much better level, which I think if Adelaide United had a striker, this is just obviously talking hypotheticals, they'd be much better off, because I think that their whole spine of the team isn't necessarily poor at all. They've actually got a very good team. But it's just been that he's been unlucky. I don't think he's been a terrible coach at all. I think he's actually done a fantastic job with Adelaide, but it's just been unfortunate that his pragmatic approach hasn't won over many supporters in terms of the board, but in terms of Adelaide United supporters, he's adored. He's like a god over in Adelaide at the moment. And I think, look, it's unfortunate how it's going to come to an end. But then again, though, he's got five games left in the season. He's got a final series potentially to prepare for. And let's hope that Adelaide, in particular, if they can get to the finals, they can create some damage, because it's looking like if they do get to the finals, they might have an original derby matchup against Melbourne Victory, and that's going to be big because Adelaide United do match up quite well against Melbourne, and anything can happen in those sort of games.
And we saw what they did last time they met.
Well, they got that 2-0 win. And look, but in saying that, though, Adelaide have been a bit of rotten luck of form, run of form, and they're 5 points inside the top six. They're going to need to start getting wins on the board after this international break, which might be good for them to reset, get some players back as well, and potentially look to solidify their spot inside the top six heading into the final series.
And see, look, I personally don't think that it actually has anything to do with the success that Marco Kurz has had so far this season. I think it's purely the fact that the chairman actually wants to bring in his own manager of his choice. Because, again, Kurz was hired by the previous chairman. So, again, it comes back to that idea that Jonathan just threw out to us of a club inheriting or a coach inheriting
a squad,
a former team that he hasn't picked, and then being sacked for those the reasons, and it just doesn't make sense. But again, Marco Kurz is on his way out, and there aren't too many happy Adelaide United fans, to say the least.
They'll be happy with what he's done, though. In this 2 seasons he's been at the club, he's been absolutely fantastic. We must not forget that. He took over from Guillaume Moore and he's done brilliantly. FFA Cup triumph. They haven't been able to win a final yet. If he can end on the best note, a blaze of glory, it'd be fantastic. I think it'd be very intriguing to see who they bring in next season. But Louise, we're going to have to leave that for just a moment.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR with Louise Taffer and Nick DiBano. And joining us now is Albion Park Soccer Club's president and also head coach, Adrian Acciulli. Adrian, thank you so much for coming on FNR.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, guys. Hopefully the reception's good. Albion Park's Optus reception isn't great. So as I've moved away from the house, I'm driving. It's gradually got better. So that's the good thing.
Adrian, it's Nick here. And look, for those that don't know, tell us a little bit about what's going on tonight. Craig Foster playing in a one-off game with all proceeds going to charity, I believe.
Yeah, so so basically the club we called it, there's a few clubs in Albion Park. So this is a community league club. So basically a park football team. We're called Albion Park City Razorbacks. Basically, it's just me and my mates that have been playing for about 10 years. And so we entered our team in the FFA Cup prelim rounds down here for the fun of it this year. And obviously, I work at SBS and lucky enough to work with Foz. But Foz said, oh, would you be keen to play a game? And he said, yeah, why not? So from there, I just thought we could evolve it into a big charity fundraiser. And yeah, it's going to be a big night. So if you're in Wollongong or even Sydney, want to drive down in Lockhannon Park, kick off 8:15, but also be streaming live on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. So, yeah, basically what we're doing is we're raising money for Mums for Refugees, SCARF, which is a local Illawarra charity helping, helps with assistance for refugees, and Tour to Cure as well. One of our colleagues, Darren Maher, is doing that. So we've got a whole bunch of fundraising initiatives, the main one being for every minute Foz plays, two local businesses called the DRB Group and MSL Engineering are donating $20 to charity. And then we've got a whole bunch of other fundraisers on. We've got a signed Socceroos jersey up for grabs. And our goal is to get a crowd of 10,000. I mean, sorry, a crowd of 1,000, sorry, and raise 10,000 for charity. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Adrian's a fantastic cause in particular. And I was doing some reading about some of the players who are playing today. A lot of them are, I believe, rugby league converts. And there's even your right back is still struggling to learn how to take the art of the throw-in.
Yeah, well, Foz said, well, if he's going to play, he's going to have to learn how to take him. But he's perfected the art. We've been doing some throwing training. But, yeah, he got called for about 5 foul throws last year. We just said, don't, mate, just don't take him. So that was his first year of football last year after playing league his whole life. But it's just, it's just the great thing about football is anyone can play. And a lot of our players, you know, they're talented athletes. But really, with sports like rugby league, it's so brutal on the bodies. You really can't play it socially after a certain age, and especially with work. Whereas football, a lot of people can play and keep playing. So a lot of our players have come from rugby league, and they're probably our best player was a great junior rugby league player and started playing with us, and he was a quick winger. So a lot of the best players have been wingers generally or have been our ex-league players. But, we've got a few actual decent football players for once now because we've stepped up a bit in our competition. So we've actually got some proper football players. So, we're doing that. We're warming up properly for the first time. We're training properly. It's unprecedented scene for the club.
And is there any chance you might be able to get Foz on a long-term deal?
Oh, look, in the miracle event that we win, maybe hopefully he'll play again. But, you know, we when we got the draw, we obviously got drawn against an IPL club, which is probably like NPL 2 level down here. So we thought, you know, instead of just rocking up and probably losing like 5 or 6 nil and not having much of a hoo-ha, I thought, you know, we could really put some focus on Illawarra football, the region in general for one night. Obviously, there's no A-League club down here. The Wolves are doing really well in NPL 1 to start the year. So, yeah, hopefully we can just put some attention on the region and fingers crossed, miracles can happen. You know, we might jag a win, but we're at odds that, you know, when you go to the tab and, you know, you bet on the Greyhounds, we're the 50-1 chance. So, but, yeah, it's for us, it's not about the spike. Whatever that happens, it's how much difference we can make. We're just battlers trying to make a difference.
And, Adrian, as they say, anything can happen. It's the magic of the cup.
Well, that's true. Anything can happen. I used the analogy today. I said, well, if Donald Trump can become president, anything can happen. So, look, we've actually got some decent players. And Foz had a session with the boys 2 weeks ago and he was so hands-on with these guys. And these guys, Foz, for them, is someone that, you know, they've watched on TV for years. They used to watch play. So we've got some decent game plans. Like, you know, for us, you know, I've always been pretty simple. I'm like, you know, when, you know, the classic park football saying, when in doubt, put it out. We've always been big on set pieces. But obviously, Foz loves to play the beautiful game. So we'll try and play some stuff tonight. But, yeah, it's going to be a great event. But, you know, anything can happen, you know. Like, it's that's why they play the game. But, you know, the magic of the cup is something like this. This is why the FFA Cup's so brilliant, is because this is like 5 rounds before the main stage. But we've managed to turn into something that's great for the region and just for football in general and the magic of the cup, basically.
Adrian, can you tell us if Foz is going to be starting?
Yeah, he'll be playing holding mid to start. So fingers crossed he can pull out the 90 and get the... Obviously, that would raise about 36. So that would raise $3,600 for charity if he plays that from those two businesses for Mums for Refugees. So, yeah, he'll be starting, and if we get a penalty, he'll be taking it. So we've got him on pen duties. Hopefully he can snag, you know, we're not sure if he's going to be delivering set pieces or hovering around. But, yeah, he's definitely will be taking the penalties if we get one. So might get a fluke handball in the rare occurrence where you get the ball in their opposition box. Who knows? So, yeah, no, he's very fit for 49, that's for sure. So
you're saying he's still got it. The Foz, the man himself, has still got it. He's able to play the full 90. Could definitely play a big part in getting you guys over the line.
Oh, well, when we had the kick around 2 weeks ago, when you get a train with someone that's obviously played at a high level, you can see it. Like, we're doing drills and just his pass, just the vision for the first pass is just unbelievable. Like, you know, I've been lucky enough, obviously, working as a journo to go to trainings and watch trainings close up, but when you're training with someone, it's just it's just amazing when you can really tell the class of a player. You know, we're used to taking like 5 or 6 touches or something like that, and you know, this guy just first touch, bang, ball's in the spot. So, you know, who knows? It's and I just hope he can last the distance, because as I've seen, at the end of the day, it's all about charity. And if it's a close game, that'll be great. You know, we'd love if it's a close game. We'll really keep it a spectacle and. Yeah, it's just fingers crossed he might, you know, get a goal. It'll be a classic because it'll go viral. And just, we're hoping just for a great night.
And Adrian, if only Lucy wasn't pregnant, you could have gotten her as well.
Well, yeah, well, that's for sure. Well, you know, we'd love to say we're such a small team, but we'd love to have a women's team. You know, my fiancé always asks, she goes, why can't I play? And I was like, well, you know what I mean? But, we'd love to, you know, we would have loved to have Lucy down. She's obviously promoted the game on the World Game Show and got a little baby coming along with Corey. And Corey being a gong boy, maybe one day we could lure him to the club when maybe, you know, who knows, we're representing Wollongong in the A-League or somewhere. But, nah, just, you know, it's great to have the SBS team on board and great to have support of the football community, including yourselves at Football Nation Radio. You guys do a great job.
Well, Adrian, thank you so much for coming on the show. All the best tonight and keep up the great work.
No worries. Thanks, Elise. And you're doing a great job there, really keeping up and spreading the gospel. And as I said, if you can't make it tonight, be watching on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Bar TV Sports, kindly doing the game for us, free of charge, a donation, amazing gesture. We'll have, as I said, commentary, and it'll be on the FFA Cup page. And if you want to watch just the park football team, like, we have not over-promoted the game in terms of quality, but more for the spectacle, be sure to watch.
Yeah, we'll definitely be turning it on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
No, pleasure. All the best, Adrian. That is Albion Park Soccer Club's president and head coach, also SBS's sports reporter, Adrian Artuli, joining us there ahead of their big FFA Cup round
three. Is this the biggest
clash.
Amateur football match in Australian history?
It probably could be.
It has to be up there with, I believe, George Best played a game out here, which was pretty big. He played out in WA, played a couple big games. But recently, I think that this has to be up there. If you're looking right down in the grassroots, you're looking at community club level, it's going to be massive. It'd be great if they get 1,000 people in, because that means $10,000 to charity. And look, if they can get 1,000 people in, get that $10,000, plus if Craig Foster can last 90 minutes, let's hope he does, how good would it be if they win? Do you think Craig Foster will get a second crack? He might think, I've still got it, I can go again.
I'm going to tip them. I'm going to tip them to win.
You're going to tip them to win? That's
they're
a big,
progress
big call.
He
said
the
they're
next
6
round.
To 1 to win. That's his choice. That was his bet.
I don't care. They're going to progress to the next round of the FFA Cup, because that is the magic of the Cup, Nick. We see miracles happen in the FFA Cup and in
the
FA Cup all the time.
Of course. Wolves beat Manchester United last week, Louise, and Millwall almost beat Brighton. So there you go. That happens all the time. And in particular, this game is going to be really interesting, because obviously all that money, for every minute that Craig Foster plays, $20 go to Mums for Refugees, and all proceeds, tickets, everything else does go to Mums, Refugees and the Scarf Foundation as well. A live auction as well of a framed signed Socceroos jersey at halftime, raising funds for Tour the Cure. So gates open at 7 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Kickoff is at 8:15 p.m. from Ian McCallum Park at Kembla Grange. $5 for adults, $4 for concession, and everyone under the age of 15 can enter for free.
Fantastic initiative, and as you say, all proceeds going to
a fantastic cause.
That charity for refugees, something that Craig Foster has been very vocal about. Now, moving on, Nick, we touched on a little bit with Jonathan, the fact that some of the A-League coaches have been up in arms about losing a few of their players to Oli Roux's duty. Mm. Well, we actually heard from Melbourne City's midfielder, Riley McGree, today, who said that the week-long training camp is actually vital and invaluable in their progression. So to actually hear one of the players come out and hit back at all these coaches is something priceless.
Well, it's great to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. That's the way I see it, because you've got a chance to actually hear what the players think about it, because obviously we hear a lot of external noise about what experts and coaches and everything else they all think about. The players are enjoying it. That's something else in particular.
It's not that they're enjoying it.
But getting the opportunity to be part of a national team setup. It's obviously a youth team setup, but you're getting the opportunity to go overseas and play against some other youth teams as well, get that experience. So I think that does go a long way as well on top of that. So yeah, that's probably on the same lines what Riley McGree was talking about.
It's not only that, it's the fact that if they don't have at least 2 weeks preparation, they're not going to have any chance at qualifying for the next stage and, more importantly, the Olympics. Now,
yeah, they have to get to the Olympics, you think.
They have to. And Australia is actually unseeded after only qualifying for the last 5 of, like, 14 junior tournaments in Asia.
It's not good. It's
our
not good at all.
Is shocking.
Yeah.
And the fact that Graham Arnold's gone out and organised these friendlies and brought them in, I mean, none of these players would have ever played under Graham Arnold as well. So you've got to factor in that. He would have his own expectations, own demands, different way of playing, which is completely different to their individual clubs. Players are coming in from all over the world, not just the A-League. So there are a whole different factors. And on top of that, the big news, the Oli Roux are actually playing and opening their first game on a synthetic pitch.
Wow,
and the conditions are going
playing
to be...
They're playing against KSK Honda's boys.
38 degrees.
Oof,
now,
you
touched on it. I was getting there. But there is an A-League star who is set out to ruin the Oli Roux's chances, and that is KSK Honda, because he is, of course, the head coach of the Cambodian national team. And given that it's an international break, Melbourne Victory don't have any games, so he's gone over to offer his support to the under-23s of Cambodia. Now, this could go either way.
Well, look, this is interesting as well, because just looking at it, the Oli Roux play a game the next day as well against the Chinese Taipei, and then play 2 days later against South Korea. So there's going to be probably a bit of rotation. If the conditions are 38 degrees, and it's probably going to be even higher
on synthetic.
And
they're playing on synthetic,
That will be definitely tipping over 40, probably getting closer to 45 degrees. So there's going to be a lot of squad rotation. I think that there'll be a few coaches out there getting a little bit nervous that there might be a couple soft tissue injuries that might come out of that. Obviously, cramp or other injuries. You don't want to overdo these players over this little period of time. And if there are teams banging on the door for finals, I'm looking at the likes of Tom Deng, Johnny Katrumbas, Tas Mutakudas as well. We saw how much of a fuss Marcus Babbel was over his losing his Western Sydney Wanderers players like Backus and Majok as well. Even Riley McGree, etc. There's going to be players that will be hoping they don't get injured because A-League finals are in a few weeks' time and some of these teams also playing ACL. So it's important that they stay fit. I'd like to see a bit of rotation, though. Give some of the other guys a crack. Don't overdo these guys over this period of time. But it's a fantastic little break, a little chance for these guys to test themselves and work under the tutelage of the national team manager. But talking about the under-23 team, though, Louise, I know Josh Parrish was very adamant about if you're not going to make it when you're 23, if you're 23 and you haven't made it yet, then the chance of you getting in are going to be very minimal. I do feel the same sentiments because I feel like that in this, that the money does, or that proceeds, or the focus should be going towards the younger age groups, the 19s, the 21s, the 17s, even the 16s, because 23, by then, you want to be playing for the Socceroos. Like, if you're 23 and you're not, I wonder how many players, just curiosity thing, like if you ever could get stats up, have actually made their debut after they've been 23. Like, actual Australian-born players, not like your Martin Boyles, etc.
I think there would be a few. There'd be a few. Because you see players come in all the time. What, Andrew Naboot only debuted for the Socceroos?
He was about 24, but there are the very rare, very, very rare exceptions where you see, because a lot of the guys do debut. Around 22, 23 is when they usually get into the national team. That's usually the case throughout all of world football, not just in Australia, that you see them get those cracks. So I do have my sentiments about it, but it is imperative, in my opinion, very similar to you, Louise, they do get back to the Olympics. If they don't get it, it's 12 years without their last Olympics appearance. Back in 2008 was their last one. 2012, no. 2016, no. And 2020 could be the same sort of result if they're not careful.
Exactly. And you can understand why Graham Arnold is trying to do everything he can, because he was the last manager to have guided an Oli Roos team to the Olympics, which is just mind-blowing. But not only that, look, I understand where you're coming from, but I also think that if you took the Oli Roos completely out of qualification, said we don't want them to do the whole Olympics thing at all, I would still believe that they should have camps, regardless whether they're in qualifiers or not. I still think that they still need to be ticking over, and I still believe that you need to be getting a core group of under-23 players in, because if you don't have that, then how are they going to learn the methodology used for the Socceroos if they are to progress?
Yeah, but it could be same thing at the under-21s, though. You could have the exact same logic of that at the under-21 level. They can have that same methodology. Maybe Graham Arnold takes one step back and goes back to under-21s.
But it's not the same. I think elements are the same, but it comes back to the coach and their style.
Well, I'm just having a look now in terms of how the other continents qualify for the Olympics in terms of how it works. But most are around an under-23 setup in the AFC, the Africa, and the OFC and Oceania do it. But in CONCACAF and in UEFA, it's more set up for the under-21s. So it's the under-21 team that get there. And usually by the time they get there, they're around that 22, under-23 range. I think it'd be pretty interesting to see if they just made the under-21s. So I'm looking at this team that Australia's actually got together for the under-23s. Everyone's 21 and younger. So wouldn't it make more sense to push them back and say we're the under-21s and go with that sort of thing? I'm just thinking hypotheticals here, because the oldest players are your Tom Dangs, Alex Gersbach, Johnny Katrumbas, the three goalkeepers in Glover, Holmes and Margush, Joey Champness. Brandon Wilson, sorry, is the oldest one at 22.
And do you know why they're 22 and younger?
Well, they're the players that fit the bracket.
Because our pool of talent is so shallow. That is why. That's why. So one of the best players, who is actually 23, already plays for the Socceroos. That's Chris Economides. So he obviously wouldn't be
eligible. That's what I mean. If you're 23, you should be playing for the Socceroos.
But at the same time, I don't think that should be an argument, because you're not going to have 10 under-23s or 5 under-23s playing for the Socceroos, realistically. Now, that also comes down to the coach. It comes down to who he wants to bring in. And you know, with Graham Arnold, as we touched on with Jonathan Howcroft, he loves, whether he says it publicly or privately, likes to play with an older squad.
Yeah, but that can come back and bite you. In other national teams, Louise, that has been the complete undoing of teams. Now, I'm looking at the Netherlands, for example, have gone to a complete reboot. In their most recent team, they've just called up. They've called up, I believe, looking at this now, they have 7 players under the age of 23. Kenny Tetti, Denzel Dumfries, Pablo Rosario, Donny van den Beek, Frankie de Jong, Steven Bergwijn, and Matty de Ligt. Now, that, for me, is a signal of intent. Their oldest player is 32, and that's Ryan Babel, who won't start. After that, 29 in Cillessen, Strootman, and Blind, and everyone, oh, sorry, Daily Blind, and everyone else is in between that 24 to 28 range. Italy as well have a similar sort of philosophy. They've got guys that are under the age of 23. Stefano Sensi, Moise Kean, Nicolò Zaniolo.
It's because they're
Gianluca
building
Roma.
For the future.
Of course. And that's what I think Australia need to do as well, because there are guys there that have to make that next step. That's why I think when you're 23, you need to be pushing for the national team. Like, if you're not, it's a worry for me, because as I said, it's very rare that you're going to see a guy, unless you're an extreme late bloomer, you're going to get into the Socceroos side. And look, it's a shame for me that there's not enough of those players at the moment for that under-23 team, because I'll look at it. There probably aren't a range of guys who could play for the Socceroos other than maybe your Tom Dangs, your Alex Gersbachs, and maybe a few others who could probably get into that side. But eventually they're going to have to be pushed through. And does it say more about that our top-end talent, who's a bit older, when they move on, our players coming through just aren't good enough? Because we don't know how good these guys get. They could be superstars, but we're just drawing up hypotheticals here, because if they're not in now at 22... For me personally, I might have different sentiments to others, but that's the way I see it. I just find that a little bit concerning.
It is concerning. It's very concerning because the responsibility falls on the A-League clubs now to develop the players, but are they actually taking on board that responsibility? No one is keeping them accountable for their actions. Now, if I was the technical director, I would be going around to every single A-League club and saying, well, what are you doing? How are you developing your players? What kind of style of play do you play with? Does it align with my goals and values and objectives? I would be really man managing every single club to make sure
You can't do that, because if the FFA and the A League became independent, they can't go around and do that, because it's completely two different things. Because you can't say to a club, you have to play by these ideologies and play these players,
you wouldn't,
because
say
you're
that
for the national team.
You'd just gauge how they're playing.
Yeah, but you
there's
get the
no
gauge.
Reason why the TD can't do that. It can't
no,
go
they,
around
they
and
can,
have a proper
but,
relationship
but
with
most,
every club.
But most clubs will probably turn around for some of them and tell them to get stuffed, because there are clubs out there that have ambitions to win the Asian Champions League
which
and want experienced players.
Which is why, and I come back to it, camps and preparation for these youth national teams is more important. If they're not being taught the style of play for the national team, then how are they supposed to learn? What, they're supposed to just go into qualifiers from day one and kick the ball around
and
make it up on the spot?
Well, a lot of these players that got selected are playing week in, week out. So,
but not the same style of play.
But teams, clubs and national teams, like AC Milan don't have the same style of play to Italy. Manchester United
don't
have the same style to England.
That's my
it's
point.
Totally different.
That's my point.
But in saying that, you know, it's... Anyways, look, I'm getting confused talking
about
this at the
confused.
Moment. I'm getting very... I'm completely mind-blown at the moment. But anyways, as we said, though, look, let's just see how they go over these next few games. It's important for them to get wins and get a bit of confidence with these results. Hopefully they don't get too swamped by the conditions. I think that's the biggest worrying thing for me. Knowing you're going to play on 38 degrees on synthetic pitches... Unbelievable. It makes me sweat just thinking about it.
I wouldn't be too happy. I'd want the sprinklers on like an hour before. But anyway, before we wrap up, Josh, because the hour has Nick, the hour has just flown. I'm looking at the next bit of news that I want to talk about.
Yep.
Josh Belante. Now,
yes.
A bit of transfer news. He's been absent from Sydney FC's last two games.
Yeah.
Poang Steelers are lingering around. Again, I mentioned that
85% that he's good as gone.
Korean and Japanese transfer windows are still open. Is this them finalising a deal?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Sydney FC came out and basically said he's gone. You know, like that's probably what we've heard. I don't see why he'd be staying at the moment. Look, if Berlante obviously is a big U-turn, things could change in the deal. But right now, he looks good as gone. But there's even rumours saying there could be more. And
that's
another
right.
interesting point. And just another bit of transfer news intertwined with some of those Asian clubs. KSK Honda apparently is done. Apparently, end of this season, he's already told Melbourne Victory he's off, and the Victory already searching for his replacement. Because it's such a big move, because it's such a big player who demands such a big salary, The Victory will be looking for a new international marquee, which for me is actually pretty exciting who they might bring in, because there's a lot of big names coming out of contract. So that will be another interesting thing. But where to next for Keisuke Honda? We saw him hanging out with Jaden Smith not long ago, promoting the new water. We know he's got interests outside of football as well. He might look to coaching. He might decide to go play somewhere else in Asia, maybe a homecoming back to Japan on a permanent basis.
We'll have to wait and see. Nick, thank you so much for joining me on Evenings on FNR, and thank you for your company at home. If you've missed any of the show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. We'll see you again at the same time tomorrow. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.